Chapter 83. Jesse had always been the wild card, the one person in this mess whom he had worried about from the start. Now, as he worked his way through the woods that covered the northern approach to Jesse's property, he knew he had been right to worry. Everything he'd done since Zivon had shown up back in Paradise was to throw suspicion away from himself and aim it squarely at Alicia and John. Yet in spite of the hoops he'd jumped through and the incredible risks he'd taken to throw Jesse off his scent, Jesse had almost gotten it right. Almost. He just picked the wrong suspect. Kneeling at the edge of the woods to collect himself before he had to cross the little clearing between the woods and the footbridge that led to Jesse's house, he laughed to himself. To think that idiot, Hasty Hathaway, had hired Jesse because he thought Jesse was an easily manipulated, incompetent drunk. As he took deep, slow breaths to calm himself, he went back over the steps he'd taken since he'd left the station house. He wanted to make sure he hadn't done anything to give himself away, because once he crossed the footbridge and killed Jameson, there would be no going back. No, he thought he had been careful, even more careful than usual. He had hurried back to the office and borrowed one of his junior agent's cars so that Molly wouldn't spot his big white Infiniti in her rearview mirror. The agent was only too happy to swap her 10-year-old Chevy Malibu for the boss's SUV for the night. He had hung far back, following Molly as she went from the sandwich shop to the market. And then when she left the market, he kept so far behind her that he nearly lost her a few times in the falling darkness. Then, when it was obvious to him Molly was headed to Jesse's house, he turned himself around. He'd gone back to the office and made noises about having a late appointment with a client in Boston. After that, he'd gone home, told his family the same story about a late appointment in Boston, and sent them out for dinner. When he was sure they were gone, he went down to the basement and got his classic Mauser K98 bolt action with scope from the gun safe. If he got lucky, he'd be able to get a clean shot at Jameson through one of Jesse's windows at a reasonable distance. But because of how Jesse's house was situated with all the woods and water, he couldn't count on it. So he took out his cheap Cobra 32 that he'd picked up in the parking lot of a gun show in Tennessee years back. It was basically untraceable. He ejected the clip and thumbed the ammo out of the clip. He put on a pair of latex gloves, reloaded the clip with fresh ammo, wiped down the clip, and wiped down the gun. He loaded the Malibu with the rifle, the pistol, a knife, his hunting camo, and boots. When he was sure he had everything he might need, he took off. He hadn't headed directly over to Jesse's place. That would have been careless, even reckless. No, first he rode back into town, past the police station, to make sure Jesse's explorer was gone. He'd dropped by the firehouse to see if Robbie Wilson was around. Wilson's silly red Jeep was nowhere in sight, but that didn't mean he was headed to Helton. "Sorry, Mr. Marchand," said the young volunteer on duty. "Chief said he wouldn't be available at all tonight." It was only then that the selectman headed out to Jesse's place. Just as he anticipated, he couldn't get a clear rifle shot at Jameson. Although he could see lights on in two rooms in the house, all the shades and blinds were drawn. Fucking Jesse. He'd made Jameson take precautions just in case. He could make out flickering from the TV and Jameson's shadow in the living room, but not clearly enough to risk a shot. If he missed, Jameson would be on the phone and the cops would be there before he could get back to the Malibu, which was hidden in some brush about a quarter mile back up the road where he'd changed into his camo and boots. Unfortunately, he was going to have to get in close for this. Maybe as close as he had been all those years ago on Stiles Island. He checked his watch, laid the Mauser up against a tree. No sense lugging the rifle around with him. It would only slow him down and get in the way. He'd just pick it up on his way back to the car. One thing was working in his favor. Jameson liked the TV volume turned up high. It was so loud that Marchand could almost make out what show Jameson was watching. Still, Marchand was careful as he crossed the little footbridge across the pond. There were no cars in the driveway. Good. He went to the opposite side of the house, away from the living room, away from where Jameson was watching TV, and moved along the gravel path so as not to leave boot prints. There were no cars around back. Better. Marshawn was sweating pretty intensely, and his mouth was dry. It seemed his heart was nearly as loud as the TV, but he didn't mind this feeling. He was at his best when stressed to the max. It was that way on the basketball court, in business, in politics, and in murder. He had killed 3 times now, and though he didn't like admitting it, it got easier each time. If it were only Alicia and John who had killed the girls, Marshawn thought, they would have been caught before they got off the island. Without him, they would have been lost. It was his quick thinking that had saved their asses. Now the time had come to finish saving his own. He had decided to do it quickly, to break the back door's glass, open the lock, and charge into the living room before Jameson could react. He'd empty his clip into Jameson, ransack the place, steal something of value, and get out. Poor Jameson. Wrong place, wrong time. If only the thief had known this was the police chief's house. Marshawn removed his boots, slipped on his shooting gloves, and racked the Cobra's slide. He put in his ear protection and took one last deep breath before elbowing through the little glass pane nearest the door handle. Then it all came in a rush. The glass was broken. His hand was undoing the lock. He was through the door, out of the kitchen, past the dining room, and into the living room. Perfect. The TV was blaring and Jameson was buried under covers, asleep on the couch. Marshawn aimed and fired. He kept firing until the clip was empty and the Cobra's slide locked. The room stank of hot metal and gunpowder. Smoke hung in the air like Jameson's ghost. With his work done, Marshawn removed his earplugs and yanked the TV's plug out of the socket. The room was deadly quiet. Marshawn turned to go upstairs to see what valuables of Jesse's he could take, but he got the sense that something wasn't right. He stood dead still and listened. When he heard the hammer click back, he knew what it was. Chapter 84. Jesse stepped out of the shadows, his .38 coming into the light before him. "You shouldn't have emptied the clip," Jesse said, his voice steady and cool. "With you there holding your gun on me, yeah, in retrospect, that was pretty dumb. If I left myself some ammo, I might have had a fighting chance. But there are a lot of things I wish I could take back." "I'm sure that's true, Bill. We'll have time to discuss that later. For now, drop your weapon and kick it over to me. Slowly. Any sudden movement at all, and I'll shoot." Marshawn did as he was told. Jesse asked, "Do you have any other weapons on you?" "A knife." Marshawn tilted his head at his left hip. "Same drill," Jesse said. "On the floor, kick it over. I would hate to have to kill you, Bill, but if you force my hand, I won't think twice about it." "I don't doubt it." Marshawn noticed his voice was brittle. Jesse asked, "Anything else?" "There's a rifle out across the footbridge, but no, nothing else on me." "You wouldn't lie to me, Bill, would you?" "Never have before," Jesse laughed. "Is that your nose I see growing?" "Never before all this, I mean," Marshawn said, feeling weak, the adrenaline draining out of him. "Now do exactly what I tell you to do the way I tell you to do it. Hands on your head. Turn around. Get on your knees as slowly as possible. I've had to kill men before, and I won't hesitate to kill you." As Jesse was cuffing him, Marshawn said, "So you know what it's like to kill. Kill, not murder." "Not so different," Marshawn said. "There aren't any two things more different in the world." Jesse sat Marshawn down in a chair as he called into the station. "How did you know it was me, Jesse?"
"I wasn't 100% sure, not until today. After all the elaborate stuff you went through to cover yourself, it was the little things."
"Always is."
"Not always."
"What was it then?" Marshawn asked.
"Why, Bill, you want to make sure you don't make the same mistake next time? There isn't going to be a next time."
"Humor me."
I knew it was you for sure when you lied about not knowing Shelter Cove. The whole time I was hoping it wasn't you, but when you lied about that... When I was at Shelter Cove, it looked familiar, but I couldn't remember why. Then on the ride back to town, it hit me. Marshawn nodded. The photo on the wall behind my desk. The one my wife took of me and my kids on the deck of my boat. It's been there so long, I forgot about it. You can erase your present, but you can't erase your past. Don't get cryptic on me, Jesse. It's not like you. How would you know what I'm like? It's pretty clear that we didn't know each other at all. Fair point, but I still want to know what that thing about the past and present means. Once we identified Warren Zabriskie, you were finished. Even with killing Dragao and Milner, even with that tidy little confession, which, planted typewriter or not, I didn't buy for a second, you were done. Though I've got to say it took some nerve for you to risk running down Jameson in broad daylight with Alicia's truck. What choice did I have? Marshawn shrugged. Besides, the attempt on Jameson's life gave me cover. As long as no one got a good look at me, I figured it was worth the risk. I almost got away with it. Jesse shook his head. I spoke to Robbie Wilson and Zabriskie's brother in New York. I looked at the Sacred Heart yearbook. You and Zabriskie were friends, and you were forever connected to Dragao and Milner. You were all teammates. I know something about old teammates. Once I was suspicious of you, I did some checking. Found out that your dad was big in commercial real estate around here. Seems that 25 years ago he owned the building where the girls were buried. You couldn't erase any of that. Marshawn laughed. Something funny? The confession, Marshawn said. It's almost all there. Most of it happened just like I wrote that it did. Only it was me who had a thing for Ginny, not John. And if we'd only ditched Alicia at the park, we probably would have been fine. John was a lowlife, but he wouldn't have forced himself on Mary Kate like Alicia did. Once Alicia got alcohol in him, you know how it is with him. How many times have you had to arrest him? John was fine, smoking a joint and drinking, staring out at the ocean. But when Ginny and me were getting it on, Alicia lost it. It happened so fast. He just kept stabbing her. It was John that hit Ginny with the rock the first time. I think she was already dead, but I hit her again to make sure. I mean, we couldn't leave her alive. Not after what Alicia did. I didn't have a choice, Jesse. All we meant to do was go out to Styles and celebrate the 4th, I swear. Marshawn went silent, slumped in the chair, and hung his head. Jesse said, "What's going on with you?" "Zivon," Marshawn said, as if that explained it. "Zabriskie? What about him? Was he part of what happened on the island?" "No, no way. Warren was a great guy." Marshawn was offended. I asked him what he was doing that night, but he said he already had plans, that he wasn't going to change for anything or anybody. "I take it that it was you who confessed to him, not Milner," Jesse said, hearing sirens in the distance. Marshawn nodded. "When Zivon got back from college the next summer, we got really hammered one night, and he asked me if the cops had made any progress finding the girls. I blew up at him. I told him that Mary Kate and Ginny Connolly were dead. I told him everything, every fucking detail. I begged him not to go to the cops. I kept saying how it was his fault, that if he had been there to make Mary Kate happy, none of it would have happened the way it did. That they were dead and that all of us spending our lives in jail wasn't going to bring them back. If only I hadn't confessed to him, it wouldn't have come back on me. But I guess it always comes back, right? You always have to pay in the end." Jesse didn't answer because the truth was that not nearly enough people paid in the end.